What is happening, PGA DFS fans, as we bring you in on a little classical note here on this Tuesday? I was just telling my buddies, Ben and Jordan behind the glass, that I heard this intro song yesterday in my son's little show. So it just must mean good things for this week, Ben, at the Memorial here. Pretty big week, actually. One of the biggest weeks, I would say, at least in terms of DFS prizes that I've seen around, that is a non-major or non-players championship. And another place that's offering some pretty cool contests, well, that's our sponsor of the show, Monkey Knife Fight. And I've got some cool ones this week, Ben. But before we get into the Monkey Knife Fight Bet of the Week, let's tell everybody just a little bit about them. Well, let's see. Their player props-based contests are easy to play and don't require the time commitment that other DFS sites do require in order to be competitive. With Monkey Knife Fight, you are in charge, and whether you want to play any of the main sports, NBA, UFC, PGA, esports, soccer, NFL coming back, NHL, Monkey Knife Fight has it. So to get started, head on over to monkeyknifefight.com and choose which game you want to play, your contest type, your buy-in, and even better, use promo code OSMO when you sign up and you're getting a free $100 bet. Maybe some of that $100 match you want to play, Ben, this week is starting tomorrow. I found a fun one. This is where you get to pick what each golfer is going to shoot for just the first round. I've got three names for you: Jordan Spieth, Colin Morikawa, and Xander Schauffele. The line has been set at 70.5. I'm going to give you my theory. Colin Morikawa, his irons have been so good lately. I think he gets together probably a 68 in round one. But I'm going over on both Spieth and Schauffele for round one. I got Spieth around 71 and Schauffele around 73. Schauffele just in bad form and in bad spirits. And Spieth kind of lost his game a little bit on Saturday and Sunday, self-proclaimed, not me. So I'm going to take those. That's going to give me a 4X payout. You want to take the other side of that, or do you like where my head is at in terms of this prop contest?
So I like stuff like this because you can kind of correlate. If you think the course is going to be like very hard, you could go all one way and say no one, you know, very few guys. Or if you think it's very easy with the par fives, this is very attainable. I'm going to agree with you on two. I think that Xander, we're going to get there. I think that Xander has a bounce back week, and I hope it starts on Thursday. His form has been a little shaky. I was very impressed. I know it was sample size and whatnot, but last year at Memorial, I remember it vividly. He played really well. He just couldn't buy a putt. 13th, but he lost 5 strokes putting. And I think this course ultimately will be a good fit for him long-term.
Okay. So it looks like on Colin Morikawa, you agree. Seems like the irons are just in such good form. And seems like we're both on the Spieth, maybe a little bit of a back start there on Thursday after a tough Sunday, not being able to finish it out. So that is the Monkey Knife Fight prop of the week. Thanks to them for the continued support. And that's a perfect segue into talking about, of course, the Memorial and Mirfield Village. Now, a little bit of waves this morning, Ben, going around about the course changes. And one of the greatest pieces that came out, check out this guy at @CS_Murph. He's been a friend of mine, Chris Murphy, on Twitter. And he tweeted out the link that gives you the rundown of all of the changes. But you got me here to tell you, to summarize, just the greens are a lot firmer. And maybe some of the holes are a little tighter. So going to play hard. But Ben, last year, played to a scoring average of 74. Now, this specific tournament, Workday was a little easier. But the Memorial, 74, second hardest out of 41 golf courses last year. Do you expect something similar?
I don't know if it's going to get to that level. So yeah, last year was really weird. We played Workday here. Yep. And then the next week we played Memorial here. And it was like two different courses. I think it's going to fall in the middle. Memorial is always a difficult challenge, the rough. And you mentioned the redesign. That's something I think is a factor this week. I don't think it's going to be that hard, though. Last year was brutal. I remember that tournament very vividly. There was elements. There was wind. I don't think we see it quite as tough this year.
I think it's interesting that we do have the U.S. Open here in a couple of weeks, the way this tournament folds. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Jack kind of step up and be like the U.S. Open prep almost. He kind of talked about it last year on air during this tournament that he wanted to see this specific outing be a little bit harder for the guys, be a little bit more of a test. And it seems like the players liked that. So we'll see if that continues. Now, I think John Rahm like won at single digits under par. Maybe something like that happens again. But I would still see it going closer to the 10 under par. The par fives are just a little bit too reachable if we don't have all of those elements there. So we do have a very, very good field, though, a stacked field this week, Ben. It's interesting because we have a stacked field, but yet Jordan Spieth, out of 120 golfers in top 65 and ties making the weekend, Jordan Spieth is the top price golfer again this week. I don't even know what to think about that, to be honest with you. I thought about it last week and it made sense because it was his home course and he hadn't finished out of the top 10 in 25 years. But he was also only going against a couple of guys. Now it's seven of the world's top 10 and he's still the highest priced guy.
I was a little surprised. I know that he's been playing, I mean, as good as anyone, you could argue maybe better than everyone, but I don't know if Memorial is like the ideal track in general. Now the short game, you know, the putting, it's there, but you got Rahm, you got Bryson, you got Rory. You just mentioned it. Like last week it was JT and a handful of, you know, quality players. This is a little stronger than that. There's a lot of big names here. Invitational, so we only have 121 guys, but I was surprised to see Spieth at the very, very top.
Yeah, me too. And it seems like for the second straight week, a little bit ownership is being a bit concentrated. And of course, we'll get into that here as we talk about more of the players. But it does seem like on first run that a lot of these golfers over 10K are going to be passed on. Even John Rahm, who, yeah, he backdoored a top 10 at PGA. There's no doubt about it. Great Sunday round, went out pretty early and was able to post that number and get there. But he made a couple of other terrible mistakes that had he not done, he might have been able to win or at least push Mickelson for the title. So if I had to click any guy's name, I know he's the defending champion, but that's the last thing I brought up. I do like John Rahm here this week. 11-1, a little difficult to press though.
Definitely a little difficult, but yeah, listen, Rahm, you know, it hasn't been the best. He's working on a little drought, but the game is there. He seems pretty close. JT is the one that I really don't know. It's there, but it's not sustained. He looked good at Colonial at times. He looked awful at Colonial at times. You're getting a discount in terms of where he's at 10-2. Normally he's up with the 11s. And then there's Bryson who, you see the missed cut last year. Keep in mind, he made a 10 on a hole. It's pretty hard to make a cut when you make a 10. So a lot of interesting storylines with these top six guys.
Sure. As he came to, I believe, and chat can correct me if I'm wrong here. I'd have to verify the hole, but I believe it was either 15 or 16. He was well inside the cut line. In fact, I think he was in maybe even the top 15 in the tournament at the time when he decided to try and take a three wood for no reason at the green, hit the cart path, went OB, did the exact same thing on the very next shot before then finally laying up and making a five, but with five penalty strokes.
Yeah.
So throw that out with a grain of salt. If you think Bryson is in play this week, the opportunity cost of his price being down, say where Colin Morikawa's was last week, it actually might be a good spot to jump on him. I don't know. For some reason, though, I feel like John Rahm's form is a little bit better. Even though we got a miscut at the Wells Fargo, I don't think that course suits him at all, and I don't think it suits Tony Finau, who we'll talk about in a little bit. So I'm kind of throwing that week out for both of them.
That's fair. I mean, listen, these guys, even if they're, you know, they can flip the switch so quickly, especially up here, unless you see anything glaring, which I don't. You're going to be looking at ownership, and you mentioned it's not too concentrated. Obviously, the balance build always has some appeal. And then the guy we haven't brought up, Rory, is another one where he was lost at Augusta. Then he wins at Wells Fargo, and he kind of seems lost again. A lot of question marks with a guy like Rory going to Memorial.
Yeah, I think the note that I had on Rory was, and I'll have you answer this, was Wells Fargo a smokescreen?
Yeah, I mean, so seven strokes putting is going to make you look good, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
And he hit it well enough. It wasn't like he just putted. He had a solid tee to green, as he did. It's just the thing to keep in note, his PGA numbers tee to green and his Wells Fargo win numbers tee to green are almost identical. And the results are a 49th and a first. And that just shows the power of the flat stick. There's almost a 10 stroke difference in the putting. So I think
we lost three at PGA. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think the truth falls somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. Don't think form is that far off. I think that's a great note. I'm glad you brought that up about the tee to green analysis. Certainly it seems like if you believe Rory is certainly there, looking at that analysis would be, but probably not gaining as many strokes to green as we would like him, even with the win at Wells Fargo. Like you said, take away, you know, four of those strokes gained putting, and he obviously doesn't win that event. So very interesting there. Colin Morikawa, 10-4. He obviously won the workday. We think it maybe plays right in the middle of how the workday and the Memorial played last year. But last week, eight strokes gained with the approach yet again. I really feel like a T15 is this guy's floor right now. And that is going to make it hard for me not to click his name. given how consistent he is, and even if he just loses a stroke putting, he's in the top 15 given his iron play right now.
It's tough to quantify because he's almost an outlier amongst great players with the irons. It's that good. He is, you know, you talk about Memorial and it's like, well, you're going to have to scramble. These bunkers are very difficult. All things that are true. He defies a lot of that because he can just hit all. It's crazy how consistent his formula is. With generous fairways, he should be just attacking at all times. And I mean, even with a weaker around the green and putting game than most, he's firmly in play. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, for me, that is probably the name I'm clicking. Now, Justin Thomas, even the win, all right, even if we take the win at the Players where he went 64-68 on the weekend, any event that you go 64-68 on the weekend, you're likely going to be in it just because even if you make the cut on the number and then you go 64-68, you're likely going to make up a lot of spots. So if we throw out those two rounds, he's had a bad year. There's no two ways about it. First, it was the putter. It's been the putter for a while. Last week, it was kind of the putter, writing checks to Matt Vasecki. I don't know what the deal is here. Good gesture by him nonetheless. I like Justin Thomas. I think he's fine. He went through a tough time at the beginning of the year where he was getting a lot of heat for probably rightful reasons, a little bit of antics on the golf course that had gone wrong. But I like JT. I just don't know if he's worth paying 10-2 right now. And that's crazy to say, because at the beginning of the year, I think everybody wanted to get him if he was even close to 10,000.
That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, this is a good price. The game is in flux and that breeds uncertainty, and uncertainty can be good if you think that you're capturing it, but it also, you know, he's not nearly as crisp as we normally see JT. The irons have been basically zero in two straight events. That's ridiculous for him. He's normally in the Morikawa's range, especially with short irons and wedges. So he's got to fix some things, but there's some nice breathing room. I mean, you can start with JT and make some really sick teams this week.
You can. And that's what I think is going to entice a lot of people, and where I think he probably ends up with some pretty decent ownership, probably takes away some from Morikawa. So if you like Morikawa like me, maybe that's a good thing that JT is priced below him. We've got a couple of fans of my hair in the chat, Ben, and
or mine,
Jordan, or yours. Could be yours, I guess. I'm just going with, because Jordan asked me if I got a perm before the show here, and neither you or I, or even really him, really knows what a perm really is.
Can't say I do.
Regardless, if anyone knows what a perm or we got any hairdressers in here watching us, first of all, thank you for being in here. Make sure you like and subscribe, and then secondly, let me know if you think a perm will help this mop on top of my head. But in any case, as we move down here, the board a little bit, we come to Victor Hovland. And Victor Hovland is projected to be one of the highest owned golfers in this slate, maybe for a right reason. You can get the entire field's projection as part of our Osmo Plus package. And if you aren't an Osmo Plus member, let me tell you a couple of things that you can get for free today that is normally on our premium side for golf. But our top golfers tool, gotta love that one. And then the NBA is the big board. MLB, you get player projections. That's a big one. And then NHL, you get the player rankings. So Ben, a lot of good free stuff going on. And of course, if you're not already an Osmo Plus member, great time to do so. You can join us for a week, $29.95. You get every DFS sport out there for all of our premium package. And of course, Ben, golf package is starting at $8.95 for the week. And we've got two major championships, which means probably at least 5, maybe 6 millionaire makers to come in the next month. So a great time to jump on board with us.
No better time, truly. You got the playoffs in a lot of sports. Golf, it never ends. You mentioned serious money up for grabs there. And the tools just keep getting expanded. You and Alex and the whole team have been adding more and more. Our world golf rankings have been something that I've been excited to dive into each week. And it's not just real quick. Obviously, we have a great DFS package. Everyone knows that. The betting content that we've been putting out is really ramping up. You and me, Jeff, Max, the whole gang, we do an article with our favorite picks, me and Josh's contender video. There's a lot there. And, you know, that's another great way to get some exposure to these golfers.
Sure is. And of course, many of the states coming live. In fact, even here in my state of Florida, we've got at least legislation passed through. So more and more of that comes mainstream, the more we're going to be diving into that. And certainly it's a different sweat than the DFS side. You're really sweating together rather than maybe sweating against each other in a lot of instances. So certainly, but of course, we all like the competition. So PGA DFS never going away. Speaking of PGA DFS never going away, Victor Hovland, 25% projected own. I kind of opened this little segment here with him. It's probably warranted, right? But it seems like a high price tag given that Xander's 200 less, also high owned, and Justin Thomas is 300 more.
Yeah, I think that everything you said is fair. I get why he's very popular. He makes sense. I think he's going to play well. But you have a lot of pivots. It's not just one guy. You can go a lot of different directions for the same bang for your buck. Now, Hovland has made strides to his credit around the green. He's still not a strong around the green player, but it's not a glaring weakness. And these sand bunkers in particular are brutal around Memorial, around Muirfield Village. So that's something to keep in mind. But if I think it's pretty simple, if Hovland putts, like it's like Morikawa. If Morikawa putts, forget it. If Hovland putts, it's going to be tough to stop him.
Yep. And we have our buddy Scott Stewie in the chat asking about Kyle Stanley. And trust me, we will get to Kyle Stanley at the end of the show here. Maybe not at the end of the show, but coming up, certainly a big talking point this week. Maybe the first time that DraftKings did something like this to us, rather than it being FanDuel, right, Ben? Normally it's FanDuel giving us a Ryan Moore at the minimum. This week it's DraftKings. So we'll have a lot to talk about there.
I hope it doesn't just ensue.
Oh, I know, right? Oh, geez.
Scary, but.
And anyways, I don't want to bring his name up after what I saw at Wells Fargo. We can move on. Xander. You mentioned Xander being in a good bounce back spot. Let's chat about him for a second. Read some quotes about him this morning that, and I love this. I love golfers being honest because I feel like we never get it. I feel like we always get, oh, you know, my game's close. Xander came in and he said, listen, Kiowa, not my golf course. I hated it from the second I walked on it. I let that get to me. I let that dictate my 2 days there. And I knew I was going to end up missing the cut. He said, I don't really think that's a reflection of where my game is. I think I just got really down on myself and down on the week because we put a lot of effort into these majors and I just didn't have a good feeling. So good to see that about Xander, certainly. And as you mentioned, this course seems to be good. He came in, what, I think the top 15 each of the last two times. So 15th in both the tournaments last year. Might be a good bounce back spot for him, not going to lie.
Like it. I like what you said too. It's refreshing to see someone say, you know what, no matter what, when I watch these press conferences, that's the one thing that irks me. Every single golfer, I love the course.
Love the course.
Yeah. Love it.
Course looks like, in perfect shape. Yeah.
It's the best conditions. It's the purest I've ever seen any course every week. Wow. What a coincidence. You know, it's nice to see someone that says, you know what, this doesn't fit my eye. I didn't really see it. And you know what, Xander, the game wasn't in terrible shape. He almost made that cut.
Yeah, almost sneaked in. Yeah.
Yeah. And who knows where that gets you. Reed did that and look where Reed finished in the PGA. You take that back, Wells Fargo 14th, the Masters 3rd. You mentioned his Memorial starts 2 inside the top 15, including 13th last year where he gained 12 and a half strokes tee to green and lost 5 on the greens. Oh, man. The thing that kills me about Xander, and I say it all the time, two things. One, I never get him right, which is a killer. But more importantly than that, isn't it shocking that him and Cantlay always remain chalk, even when they struggle at times?
Yeah, I think maybe we got 2 weeks of Cantlay not being owned by anybody, and he shouldn't have been, right? He was in real bad form. Then all of a sudden, he breaks through at the PGA, and people are ready to jump right back in, and it's like, you know, the edge is gone. You really gotta go out on a limb and say, this is when the form of a great golfer is going to break from being bad. Cantlay was at the PGA. I think he ended up having a bad Sunday and maybe didn't end up as high as he should have. How about Rory at Wells? I think he was under 12% owned. Going out and taking a bet on these guys that aren't playing great, but know that they're one of the best in the world. Certainly, that might be the only edge left in the sport, to be completely honest with you. And Xander, although he's trending at about 15% on, maybe that comes down as more rhetoric comes out, and that could be a really good spot to go against the grain. Now, Cantlay is going to be highly owned. Hovland, Xander, all of them going to be up there. So does that mean Decky, who had a pretty good week at the PGA, is going to go basically under-owned this week? And if that's so, I think it's a great spot.
Yeah, so I think the lower nines is probably where you're going to find some leverage. Finau, I would suspect, will be owned because he's trending upward again, and people like to play Tony Finau. But yep, you've got Decky, you've got Connors, you've got Reed, you've got Scheffler. Decky, I have no problem with. You know, he's a very good scrambler, always has been. Iron game, pristine. It's the putter. And we saw at Augusta when Decky makes him, what the result is. So I get it there. And, you know, Reed always does this thing. He just does it a little differently. Probably want tough conditions if you click his name.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, certainly have an opportunity of getting that here this week. Scotty Scheffler, that speaking about a guy that I have never gotten right, it's him. And I'm not going to play him this week.
I'm not either.
So, which means top 10, right? Auto top 10.
Exactly. Yeah. It's more a product for me that I like a lot of the 9K range. I obviously the elite players, I'd like to get some there. A lot of my lineups are going to have two guys north of Scheffler. And if that's the case, he can't really be your third man in unless you flat or you double, you know, down at like 61, which we'll talk about. But I think I'd rather play Neiman or Fitzy or those guys.
Yeah, let's talk about Corey Connors for a second. Yet another top 20, solid start last week. You know, everything looked okay. But if he doesn't get a hole in one, a top 20 doesn't really do it at 9,300, does it?
Not, especially with the field this strong. And listen, the thing about Corey Connors now, I mean, he's unbelievable. Listen, credit to Corey Connors. His Cedar Green game is as good as anyone in the world.
Yep.
He's starting to revert back to what we saw at the beginning of his run, where he is just so bad with the putter and around the green. And it makes it tough. It really caps your upside. It used to not be a problem, like when Corey Connors at majors is 6,800. When you're 9,300, you can't allow yourself to do that because coming in 18th, coming in 33rd, stuff like that is just not going to fly.
It's just not. And we had a good question from chat, and I'll bring up this with you, and you can see my answer there from Brian. He asked, if the score is going to be relatively, you know, high, low, depending on what how you want to look at it, the score is going to be single digit under par. I think that's maybe a better way to describe that. Do you think that it gives bad putters more of a chance? My answer was, well, if their tee to green game stays elite, if that's who we're talking about, sure, yes, you don't have to make as many birdie putts. But if the tee to green game goes a little sideways and you're missing the green, well, it doesn't matter how good of a putter you are, you're going to make a lot of bogeys. So I would say, sure, in a case like, you know, Luke List or something, if he hits 80% of his greens, yeah, he has a chance to win here because of the conditions. But I don't know. I wouldn't say it's much more. How about you?
No, because it's tough. I see exactly. And there's two lines of thinking there. The problem is that if it's really hard, most likely the GIR is suppressed, which means that you're scrambling a lot. And when you're scrambling, that's a concoction of around the green and putting. So it's almost like instead of the putts being for birdie, you're just going to have a lot of like 6-footers for par, and you're going to have to make your fair share of those regardless. So I think it's a different mindset. There is definitely something to hitting it to 40 feet and two putting. You hear guys talk about that at majors all the time. I think Brooks is one of the best in the world at that, and that's why he has a lot of success. I think we could see some of that. And if you're going for that route, yeah, putting could be marginalized to an extent.
Okay. So we talked about a pretty decent amount of chalk in that high 9K range. And you said you liked the guys kind of towards the 9 flat. So yeah, who's the one guy you are fading in this range, and who's the one guy that you expect to see leverage on, or you expect to be a pretty big play for you?
So Corey Connors, once again, I will I'm not going to get over the field. Just yep, not going to happen. I'd rather play Finau, Reed, all these guys. I'm going to stick with Xander. I know he's going to be popular, but I'm going to try to break out of this slump. I seemingly play him at the wrong times, but I'm going to stick with him for a little here. I think that he is primed to bounce back. And I think, as you mentioned, Kiwa, from his own mouth, not the right course. Maybe not necessarily that his game is in shambles.
Yeah, and it's not like he played all that bad. If you followed his shot tracker or were following, he was pretty highly owned. He bombed the 18th hole. It was a great sweat watching people that needed him to make the cut. It was funny watching it, yeah.
Like, he was like 60 yards either left or right in woman's purse, and then he had to drop. It was quite a scene.
It was awesome. We just got the eyes from Jordan behind the glass. Like, what? Yeah, go ahead and watch that video. It's pretty funny. Xander 18 Friday, round two of the PGA. Really funny. Needed par to make the cut. And yeah, that was for people that faded him, which I think it sounds like both you and I were. We liked it, but didn't really help our results in any way. All right, let's move on to the AK range where we get Sam. Speaking of PGA Championship Burns. Oof. Sam Burning Me Burns. He was my second highest or third highest play on the board, was in my big dollar lineup, and he decided to withdraw after slipping and hurting his back midway through the second round, proceeded to withdraw, and here he is priced at $8,900 at the Memorial. No thanks. I'll see you maybe next year. I don't know. Probably not next year, but at least not for a month or so. There's no way I'm playing this guy who just withdrew from a major.
Yeah, 0%. I don't like that. I also think he's priced to the brim. He's been playing really good, but Neiman is a world-class player. Fitzy is a world-class player. Usti is the best short game player in the world right now. I know that's not sustainable, but he is putting better than anyone I've seen in a long time. You got a lot of options outside Sam Burns.
You sure do. And he's not going to take a lot of ownership. So he doesn't, deserve that much breath, to be honest. But Matt Fitzpatrick and Louis Oosthuizen, I think, is a good debate here this week. I would favor Matt Fitzpatrick. I think that he seems to be in better form and do a little bit better at these events than Louis does. Louis struggled here at the Memorial in the last couple of chances. Now, he's a little bit better of a player right now than he was a year ago. But I just feel like I would rather put my money behind Fitzy. It looks like they're both going to be 20% owned or roughly. That's where you go. And of course, check out our full set of projections. But Ben, for me, Louis, I'm going to take the pass. Maybe I'll play him again at Torrey. Hoping for a missed cut here. And then we'll get the 7,600 price at a major that we typically get.
So that's the thing about Louis. Like, he's playing great in my, eighth of Valspar, runner up at the PGA, gaining tee to green. Hasn't lost strokes putting in 2021. Just ridiculous.
Oh my God. But
when Usti's super popular, it's tough. It's really tough because he's just an erratic player naturally. I know the withdrawals are one thing, but just in general, Usti has missed cuts from the clouds. And that part is a little tough for me to stomach. So I think Fitzy, when you look at him, he hasn't been super crisp, but I do feel more confident in the median outcome for him. Gonna have some Usti. I have no problem with it. I actually bet him. I like him as a bet at 55-1 because I think the ceiling is there. I just worry a little about chalk Usti potentially being a landmine in some regard.
This is where I do like the fact that we get the options, right? Of being able to say 20% owned on DraftKings. I really don't want to play him. We like Fitzy. We like Neiman right there. But you know what? If he does do something, it's going to be in the top five. So we go to the betting market. We bet the each way. Top the win five and top 10, and you've got him covered in that way. If he ends up doing well in DraftKings, at least you're not crushed in that regard. Joaquin Neiman, he's got the longest made cut streak on the PGA Tour, but no good finishes. Again, T50 last week. I think I said to you on the show, I can see him getting a top 30 again.
Yeah.
Here this week, maybe a little bit better. I think maybe this is, at least in my eyes, a better fit for him. And at 8,800, his price is coming down. I wouldn't mind starting him. Definitely in a cash lineup. The guy hasn't missed a weekend in a while. He would probably be one of my first click for a cash lineup. I haven't decided on the GPP. I just don't know if there's enough upside. Can you convince me otherwise?
I can say this. Good thing about Neiman is you have multiple outs. He could play great and you're going to get there. He could play average and he can outscore his placement points because he makes a lot of birdies. And that's really, really important, particularly in cash and whatnot. Around the green game will determine his fate. He's been making cuts, but his around the green game is absolutely abysmal. And I worry about that. Tee to green, I mean, he's fantastic. He's a world-class player. I think the sky's the limit for Neiman. If it's really tough, though, and he's shown he can handle it in majors and whatnot more and more, I still think that the more he has to scramble and go around the green, the worse it's going to be.
Yeah, listen, he had 15 birdies last week, which was more than Justin Thomas. Yeah, more than Colin Morikawa. Now, Morikawa had 12 birdies and two eagles, but still had enough birdies to certainly get him inside the top 20. And like you said, just maybe a little bit erratic with everything else. But with that being said, the fact that he is continually making weekends, it just will take one good Saturday round to get him back in the top 15. And at 8,800. That's a really good return. That's starting to get somebody where you really want, and no matter what type of lineup. Shane Lowry is coming in good form, and Cam Smith, Maybe not so much. The Smith over Fitzpatrick crushed me at the PGA. Is it going to crush me this week again?
Crush us. That will be the question, because I'm not playing Cam Smith.
Same way, you're going Fitzy over Cam Smith this week now? Yeah,
definitely.
So is it going to reverse crush us, I should say?
Yeah, let's hope not. I mean, Cam Smith, you know, it's tough because he's such a good putter and he's an elite around the green player. But off the tee, his approach game is just weak and he's masked it at times. And certainly he's got the pedigree and him and Leash, who we will get to, won at Zurich and whatnot. I just think when you're surrounded by multiple pivots on both sides, Neiman, Fitzy, Usti, and Lowry, all four of them I have over Cam Smith. So it's impossible for me to get exposure.
Totally understand. Now, if you're building out, let's say you're building out a GPP line, you think Xander's going to have that bounce back week. Sounds like me and you are both into Matty Fitzpatrick, which is not a great sign because I don't know how much that works out for me. Let's say we want to start with those two guys. Leaves us an average of 7,900 left. So actually a really good balanced build starting there. Do you want to add in another 8K guy before, say, going down to that 6K range in Kyle Stanley? And if so, who is it?
So I think this is the question that we got to talk about. You've got Keegan, who's playing fantastic, absolutely fantastic. But it's Keegan, and you worry about lightning fast greens with him. I don't know what to really think about that. The results speak for themselves. Tee to green, his putter's been okay. And then there's the guy who, is it something? Is it something with Ricky? Did he find anything? He gained 4.5 strokes at the PGA with the putter, and he hits a top 10. And we've talked, I mean, we're not rocket scientists to figure this out. When Ricky putts, he's going to look good. It's the first time he's really done anything since Genesis with the punter, and that was his second best finish. You think it's a blip, or you think there's something to Ricky maybe finding it?
Yeah, certainly our second smokescreen question of the week, if you will, you know, with Rory being at Wells Fargo and Ricky here. Listen, we've talked about the changes that Ricky's tried to make. He went to that mallet style putter for almost 2.5-3 months. You saw in those 2.5-3 months, he did nothing. Made a couple of cuts, maybe a couple of top 20s, a lot of missed cuts. But we always talked about that his off the tee game was actually pretty good. And now I don't have the exact stats. And Ben, if you have them in front of you, feel free to jump in and say, yeah, Ricky's been this good off the tee, but he has looked really good off the tee, right?
Better. It gained positive strokes off the tee in 3 of 4, gained 1.5 or more in 3 of 4. The irons have been hit or miss. He greens around the green every single week, as he always does.
Yep.
It's the putter. It is the putter. That is the wild card.
Sorry, what I was going to, my apologies, is he went back to his old putter, which I don't know why he ever switched to begin with. Crazy. A break at Kiowa. That's what I love to see. And listen, Keegan at 20% owned versus Fowler at 5% owned at $8,000. We're not talking about 9,000 or something like that. 8,000. I'll take Ricky here this week and hope that it wasn't a smokescreen at the PGA and that it's not going to be a prolonged downturn like it was with Spieth. We got our putter back. We're good off the tee. We need to have a good approach week and we'll be there. I'm going to go with Ricky this week.
I'm going to have some Ricky. I mean, like I said, I know it sounds ridiculous when you look at the results, but to me, not that much has changed with Ricky's game. Him and Jason Day, they went from the world's best putters around that short list to some of the worst putters. And if you change that, I mean, think what you would do to Morikawa if he became JT Poston with the irons. Like, if you're taking a guy's elite skill set and dragging it to the bottom, I mean, what do you expect?
So getting more into a little bit lineup building, there's a guy right below Ricky Fowler that has absolutely been trending, has good course history here as well. It's Gary Woodland. Now throw out really the last maybe couple of holes at the PGA, and this guy has been very good since Friday at the Valspar. That Thursday round of the Valspar I've talked about a lot. That was absolutely atrocious. Since then, though, it's been very good. We add him into this lineup that you and I are building right now. And then we go down to Kyle Stanley. You open the door up to get like another Patrick Cantlay, another something like that. So do you think that's enough firepower, given the fact that we have Morikawa in the field, we've got Rahm in the field, we've got Thomas, etc.? Do you think doing a lineup like that gives us enough firepower, or should we go for two lower price guys, skip out on Woodland and try and get one of those 10K guys?
So I think the interesting thing with this situation this week is that everyone who's already, I mean, chat's already noticed it. Everybody's noticed it with Kyle Stanley.
Yep.
I would venture to say that, I don't know, 80% of Kyle Stanley lineups have someone north of 10K. The allure of building balanced with Kyle Stanley is actually pretty interesting, or just any punt, because most people go down there so they can get the elites. Doing it the other way, where you get like three or four really good golfers, I kind of like that build. I think it's a different type of build that we talked about there. I'm going to explore that this week.
I'm not going to lie to you. The last guy, if you do throw in Woodland and Stanley, you're going to get Patrick Cantlay. So as one of your choices there, that's a pretty good build. Now, sure, if you guys want to go use that build, feel free to. Absolutely. We won't put it on the screen, but at least we walked you through it of kind of our thought process of what to do with Kyle Stanley. Now, since we're in the value in the deep dive section, I started off with Gary Woodland. What I do want to mention before we go into a couple of our bigger plays is one of the fun things that we have going on in the community is certainly when I have a bad PGA DFS week and I get the good screenshots from the community, well, it makes it all that much better. I can assure you of that. So I'm going to tell you about our Osmo Hall of Fame. We love to see the successes of our Osmo Plus members. And if you do happen to have a big night DFS using our tools, advice, or content, give us a shout on Twitter by tagging any of us, me, Ben, Jeff, any of us, and we will make sure to share it with our Osmo Hall of Fame account. So we love to do stuff like that. Like I said, when we have bad weeks, it certainly makes it all the much better that at least somebody is cashing in on the stuff that we do. So Ben, Kyle Stanley, we mentioned him. We talk about this a lot with FanDuel. If you're playing over there, they have the $300 monster or $400 monster. In events like that or contests like that, the ownership can climb all the way up to 50%. I can see something like that happening in, say, the $200 driver on DraftKings this week with Stanley. So do you want to get contest specific with fading Stanley this week, or you just want to play him across the board, or do you want to fade him across the board?
Definitely for me, it's not going to be one of the polars. Like I think you should play Kyle Stanley because he's underpriced, but I don't think you should. Kyle Stanley's still like a pseudo coin flip to make the cut. Let's not get crazy here.
Right.
This is golf. This is
playing
not
good. Won't take that away from him, but it's
but
golf.
This is not like the NBA. Like if you play NBA DFS, if LeBron was the minimum, barring injury, he would get there 100% of the time because he's out there for 40 minutes and he's very good. In golf, even if you priced Rahm at the min this week, well, there's a small chance that Rahm would miss the cut and you would be completely crushed. So Kyle Stanley, I think it is somewhat contest specific. I think it's more important, not even in the contest, but just if you're going to click him, try to conceptualize what are other people who build with Kyle Stanley going to do? And then try to do variations of that and not just follow the blueprint of pay up, play Kyle Stanley, go in the middle, pay the obvious chalk. That's not going to work this week. Kyle Stanley is going to be extremely popular relative to what we see in the lower sixes every week.
Now, of course, there's always that scenario where every single golfer that's highly owned makes the cut like we had last week. Before Patrick Reed and Sung Jae Im made late bogeys to miss the cut, the 6 of 6 was trending to be 50% last week. That's insane. Of course, follow at CutSweats on Twitter. They do a fantastic job of going through this stuff run by Nelson Adcock. It's really fun to see it kind of translate. But Ben, with only 120 players in the field and concentrated ownership again, are we going to possibly see that again here this week if Kyle Stanley makes the cut?
I mean, you absolutely could, but if he doesn't, and Chad has brought up a lot of people, you know, Russell Knox is also at 61. That's going to be an interesting pivot that people are going to look to, or just a pivot of not building like that. Like just pretend that they're not there and say, all right, even if they make the cut, yeah, they're going to make value, but they may not kill me. So you can do a lot of different things. I know that's the theme of the week, but there's a lot of guys in these mid range. I mean, we were by Woodland. You've got, I mean, Leishman is an interesting pivot. Obviously Griot, my man, is playing fantastic golf.
Sure is.
These are guys you're going to want to get exposure to. And that's a different type of build.
Yeah, it sure is. And lastly on Stanley, I think what it is doing is that it's basically taking everybody under 6,500, maybe throw out Russell Knox. Maybe he's the only one that's against this. Basically, everybody else is projected at 1 or 0% because all of the attention is going there. So if you've got a read on some golfers down there, or you think that some are trending in the right direction, you're going to get them at 0%, basically. And I got a couple of names down there once we get there, Ben, that I will throw at you. But back up to the top, I do our short form videos. I do 3 each week, and one of them is the sleepers. And this next guy, I started to sing when I said his name to myself in my head. I started to sing a song, "Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?" I'm sure we all remember that song, right?
Of course.
Well, where in the world is Adam Scott?
He's got some Carmen Sandiego vibes. He's a little mysterious.
What, like, his game is there and then totally gone. His off-the-tee game looks pretty atrocious this year. I don't know what's going on. He's ranked outside of the top 125. But he's only 2% owned at a course that he's played well at in the past. So is this a good spot to try and jump back in and get the edge here?
So I think this is a range where you're going to find low owned tournament plays, Adam Scott and Leishman, who I think are likely, more likely to miss the cut than their neighbors. But you're talking about tournament winning upside. The problem I have with Adam Scott, and listen, he's done this formula. Maybe it was a product of the pandemic last year. He's not playing a lot of golf. Like, he shows up for, I mean, here we go. I'm just going to read off Adam Scott's tournaments. He played the Players. Then he played Honda. Then he played the Masters. Then he played the PGA. Like, he's not playing a ton. That's like a two-month span, and he played two majors and the Players in one tournament. I don't know about that. That's a little dicey to me. He has no reps. Like, I like to see my guys playing so I can get a feel for where their game is at.
Yeah, and he's been adamant that, you know, he's going to play a condensed schedule and whatnot, but that certainly doesn't help us to try and understand when he's going to decide to show up and where in the world he might be. So as you can see why I had that kind of theme about Adam Scott there. Yeah, I just don't know what to do with him now. At 2% owned, I'll probably have some, not going to lie. Now,
you don't need that much, which is nice.
Emiliano Grillo, continue to play good. Tough to fade. Talk to me about him a little bit.
I mean, what's there to say? I'm just going to continue.
Why didn't he win last week? How about that? That's a different question.
Yeah, that would have been nice. Would have really helped. I locked Grillo last week. That was the, you know, and I bet him and many good things with him. I had to build 5-man lineups. So now the 5-man lineups were no good. But Grillo did his part once again.
I couldn't even do 4-man lineups. So
yeah. Grillo's found the putter. I mean, I think we've always talked about what would happen if he could putt. He's been
just positive. Match the field. Yeah.
Yeah. He's been positive in 4 of 5. You pair that with his irons, he's going to keep playing good if he does that. You know, he's been good at Memorial. He's going to be chalky, but cash, I think you can go to Grillo. I'm not locking Grillo. That was I do that very sporadically. Has to be a specific set of circumstances for me to consider doing that. Last week, everything aligned and I did it. It worked out. This week, I'm going to be over the field, but just a core play once again.
How about a guy a couple $100 cheaper that definitely gets it done with his putter? He's been doing it with his irons, though, as well. Kind of a similar format to Grillo. Obviously, he's a much better putter than Grillo. It's Christian Bezuidenhout. This guy continues to show up on leaderboards, Ben, and I think it's time, you know, at 7,600. I think he could end up in a core play for me right aside of Grillo. And now it'll just depend on if we want to go down to Kyle Stanley. But I really think starting with these two guys in this mid-7 range, you'll be able to get at least two studs in there.
It's pretty crazy because this guy's off the tee game is just bad. But Bezuidenhout, his irons are not particularly good, and he's doing it. He really is a world-class around the green and putter. You got to give him credit. It puts a lot of strain on that, but different types of courses, different types of venues, different types of field strength. And Christian, whatever his name is, Bez, shows up, man. I really do like this guy's game. Now, you know, you have to get, it's like Brendan Todd, you know what you have to do. He has to gain strokes putting, but this is a generous fairways. I don't mind it. I definitely prefer Grillo, but so does the field.
Right. It's something we have to take into consideration there as well. Again, in certain spots, I think that depending on who else you're putting in there, especially if you're putting in a 10K guy or above where we know the ownership isn't going to be that much, even on someone like Morikawa, probably not getting above 15%. I think that you probably could just put Bez and Grillo both in the same lineup and have a pretty structured. Now, Brendan Todd had a nice breakthrough week last week. I used him here last year at the Memorial because I expected conditions to be tough and fairways to be paramount. He didn't let me down, a decent start. But given that this course plays extremely long, you got to think he can't get inside the top 15, right? I mean, he's going to have to gain 10 strokes putting to do so.
Yeah, I mean, he's the best short game player possibly around, so it's possible, but I don't see it, to be honest. Give me Russell
Henley. How about for cash lineups? Do we think a top 25 is pretty reasonable given his form?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that is kind of reasonable. He is who he is. He's going to gain off the tee. by being very accurate, and he's going to make a lot of putts. His irons are just weak though. And that really hurts when you have four par fives to attack each, you know, round.
Sure do. And, got about 10 minutes left. As we mentioned at the top, so much going on, and we got the NHL playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs. The Toronto Maple Leafs have gotten knocked out. That is, don't you just love, I mean, listen, if you're a Leafs fan, you probably hate sports right now, but don't you just love sports for stories like that? You really can't make it up. I mean, it's insane. I wish you all the best, Leafs fans. I understand your pain. Maybe 20 years ago, but I have gone through a lot of titles, so I guess I can't go through that too much in my teams. I lived in Boston for so long, or around Boston area, and I've been blessed with that regard. But in any case, we do love sports. Before we move on to a couple more of our plays here, I do want to mention that this show, along with all of our other shows, can be found on our podcast network. Let's go on and check that out. Of course, it is on all of your favorite providers, Apple, Spotify, whatever you listen to podcasts on. So if you can't catch Ben and I live, or just simply hate looking at our faces, I certainly understand that. You can just listen to our voices on the podcast network. So go out and check that out. Plus, leave us a 5-star review and you could be eligible to win some free Osmo stuff. Right, Ben, if I'm not mistaken?
Certainly. Review. If you don't like our voices, you're kind of shit out of luck. So I don't know what to tell you then. But as long as you can tolerate that, a lot of ways to digest this content, and we're doing our best. Here are a lot of fun things planned at Osmo, one of the many reasons to get involved.
All right. So now back to our deep dives and value plays. I've got this list of like six guys, Todd, we already mentioned, that are all playing really well, coming off of a very good start. Doug Gim. Of course, I didn't play him, so we played well. Lucas Glover, I did play him. I tweeted out after his 4-putt from 2 feet. This is what happens when I play Glover. Then he ended up with a top 10. I don't know where that came from, but that's how it happened. Sebastian Munoz, a top 5. Harold Varner, another good start. Taylor Gooch, another good start. And Aaron Wise, another good start in his last one. So 5 or 6 names in there, Ben, at the low sevens that I think you can absolutely plug and play this week. Any of those names that you want to favor over the other, or any of those names you don't want to play this week?
Yeah, I think it's just about organizing it. There's a lot of names, because I'll throw out Matt Jones, who struggled, and Russell Henley, who struggled. Both of them, I think, fit Memorial in a lot of different ways. Could get high with the irons, and in Matt Jones' case, he's very good, you know, around the green and putter. So, to me, Taylor Gooch and Lucas Glover, they do a lot of the things that I think can translate well here. Really crisp with the irons at times. Around the green is average. Putting comes and goes with these guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think you can get away with that. Munoz would be the one guy I don't really
see. So volatile.
He gained 10 strokes putting last week. He lost a stroke with the irons, and he came in third. That's a big red flag.
Going to cut it here. Not going to cut it at Memorial. Jack's courses, there's no chance you can lose strokes on the approach and win this event. It's just, I don't think it can happen. Patton Kizzire. Just wow, man. Just wow.
Yeah, wow, that sums it up nicely.
I don't know what else to say.
I mean, this guy, he's impressive. I think this is a pretty bad course for him. He's more of like an OHL guy when I think about like where he'd excel. But
so it was last week, right? We thought he would be terrible. Or I did at least.
Mm. I wasn't on him at all. And Pat Kizzire, listen, he does some things at an elite level, and he can certainly sustain it. But I still think this is not a range that I really love.
Pat Kizzire, Hudson Swafford, Harris English, all the same guy, all live in the same area. They're all the same person, and they're all having a really good year this year. It's, I don't, you know, just it is what it is. Maybe they're all motivating each other. They've all got to win. It's just how it happens. Siwoo Kim, here's my next question on him, Ben. If you were Siwoo Kim and you were staring down military service at the end of this year, unless you came in the top 3 in Tokyo in about a month and a half, would you just go to Tokyo and learn the course every single hole and skip the rest? Because his carrying meter is very little right now. Withdrew last week during the rain delay. He's like, screw that. I ain't coming back out. Yeah. I mean, at this point, it seems like he doesn't care anymore.
Yeah, I mean, Siwoo, that's the old Siwoo where you don't know what you're going to get. it could be a nice bounce back spot because you don't know what you're going to get. So I get that part, but you're incurring massive risk.
You are.
He could be hurt. He could be nothing. No one knows with Siwoo. It's just kind of the nature of the beast with volatile players like that.
Sure is. I had my note on Charles Schwartzel. Is that the run is done? And then Max Homa, he's going to be one of those under 2% owned guys. But when he's made the cut since his win, it's been a top 10. He's missed a lot of cuts there too. So he's kind of turning into a boomer best GPP play, Ben, and I'm okay with that. I'll play Max Homa in a GPP and understand it's a 50-50 for a top 10 or a missed cut.
I mean, that's when you compare that type of volatility with low ownership, it's an electric combo because you only have to play a little of the guy. And when you hit, you get paid off. And if you incur a miscut, you only played a little of them. So it's the best of both worlds.
It is. Seems like we're on the same page there. Aaron Wise, I mentioned in that group of good players. Do we think we turned a corner here?
Kind of like Ricky, different, but like Ricky in the sense when he putts, he looks great. And he putted at the PGA Championship that broke a long stretch. Aaron Wise has the talent. I know he does. I've seen it. He's made the cut. He made the cut in all four majors in a single year. Not a lot of players can say that. You know, the elites do that, but not many regulars of the PGA Tour. So he has to fix the putter permanently. If he does that, he will be vastly underpriced at flat seven in most tournaments.
Do you think Cam Davis has the exact same type of talent, or do you think that Wise is a little bit more talented than Davis at this point?
Personally, I think that Wise has a better all-around game. Cam Davis is someone we've seen flashes, particularly with the ball striking. Cam Davis is around the green game is one of the worst on tour, in my opinion. And when you have something like that, it's really difficult to mask it. And Aaron Wise is more well-rounded. When he has that with the putter, you see the results. They're absolutely horrendous. Yeah. Cam Davis this week has to avoid those bunkers. He has to.
So a guy that I tried to play last week, because I really thought things were turning around. He has made four straight cuts, so he certainly hasn't been bad. But he couldn't get anything going. He only made seven birdies. Now, granted, he only made four bogeys or worse. So maybe he didn't putt that well, or maybe, you know, he just couldn't get that much going. I'm talking about Carlos Ortiz. Like I said, a guy that he lost four strokes putting last week. He gained with the approaches, gained off the tee, gained around the green. So good signs, Ben. Do you think this course is too big for him, though?
He's a tough one. So I looked a little more into him. I've had a couple of sharp people mention him as well. I think he's one of these players, the more I look, that he may, and this is a good thing. It's kind of fluky, but it seems like he's playing better than the results indicate. His strokes gained look better in some areas than he's got no top 20s since February. That's surprising because he's lurking around the board more often than not. Just been one thing after another of why he can't sustain it. So I think worth a dart throw. Troy Merritt to me is worth a dart throw. He's been playing really good golf. I had a little of him last week. This is where you get to, you know, you're rounding out your lineups unless you're purely punting.
Yep. Couple of names that Chad just mentioned. It's a good time to bring up Patty Harrington and Party Marty Laird. He actually did play good. What, the first 2 days of the PGA, I think. And obviously easily got through the cut. And Padraig Harrington was definitely a complete outlier. Will not be playing captain at the Ryder Cup, even after his top five at the most recent major. Really good start. Are any of those, either of those guys in play for you this week?
Harrington's not even remotely close. Party Marty, listen, those irons, that is very impressive. I still don't think I'm going to ultimately get there. It's more a product that I don't think I have to. I've got two guys, as we've talked about, at 61, if I really need salary relief. And I've got Troy Merritt, I've got Norin, CT Pan, Wise, a lot of guys a couple hundred dollars above.
Agree. So, all right, I got somebody down here that has had some really good success around this golf course. And I found in my trying to get away from Kyle Stanley's, and with under a minute left, we can kind of give our last place here. This one is Henrik Norlander. And here's my pitch on him. He really struggled off the tee last week. Colonial is a much tighter golf course than Muirfield Village. He had a sixth place here at the Memorial and then a 31st at the Workday. So clearly some pretty good form. Plus, he had a couple of rounds last week where he actually gained in all of the categories. And all four rounds he gained with his iron. So, Ben, I really like Norlander. He's been pretty much non-existent for a while now, but at 6,400 at 0% owned, he's one of my sleepers this week.
Interesting. That's a good hot take to round us out here. Yeah. I mean, listen, looking at Norlander real quick, his off the tee game has killed him. He's got to be better there. If he does that, the rest of the game is fine. I mean, the putting as well, but we know that comes and goes. So I think, again, that's just a product of this field. We got 120 something guys. We've got, you know, 65 in ties. You're going to get a lot of six of sixes most likely. And that's something tomorrow night, me and Eric Lindquist, and maybe we'll sneak on this man right here for a hot take. We did that a couple weeks ago. We're going to try to do that again soon. So on that note, I think we've summed it up nicely for Memorial, which is one of the better golf tournaments of the year for sure.
Definitely is. Next week, we go to Congaree in South Carolina for the Palmetto Championship. It's a stopover. I don't expect any of the world's top golfers to be there. Maybe